Chapter 3. Treats of Oliver Twist's GROWTH, education. And bored, for the next 8 or 10 months, Oliver was the victim of a systematic course of treachery and deception. He was brought up by hand. The hungry and destitute situation of the infant orphan was duly reported by the workhouse authorities to the parish authorities. The parish authorities inquired with dignity of the workhouse authorities whether there was no female then domiciled in the house who was in a situation to impart to Oliver Twist the consolation and nourishment of which he stood in need. The workhouse authorities replied with humility that there was not. Upon this, the parish authorities magnanimously and humanely resolved that Oliver should be farmed, apostrophe, or, in other words, that he should be dispatched to a branch workhouse some 3 miles off, where 20 or 30 other juvenile offenders against the poor laws rolled about the floor all day, without the inconvenience of too much food or too much clothing, under the parental superintendence of an elderly female, who received the culprits at and for the consideration of 7 pence halfpenny per small head per week. 7 pence halfpenny's worth per week is a good round diet for a child. A great deal may be got for 7 pence halfpenny, quite enough to overload its stomach and make it uncomfortable. The elderly female was a woman of wisdom and experience. She knew what was good for children, and she had a very accurate perception of what was good for herself. So, she appropriated the greater part of the weekly stipend to her own use, and consigned the rising parochial generation to even a shorter allowance than was originally provided for them, thereby finding in the lowest depth a deeper still, and proving herself a very great experimental philosopher. Everybody knows the story of another experimental philosopher who had a great theory about a horse being able to live without eating, and who demonstrated it so well that he had got his own horse down to a straw a day, and would unquestionably have rendered him a very spirited and rampacious animal on nothing at all, if he had not died 4 and 20 hours before he was to have had his first comfortable bait of air. Unfortunately for the experimental philosophy of the female to whose protecting care Oliver Twist was delivered over, a similar result usually attended the operation of her system, for at the very moment when the child had contrived to exist upon the smallest possible portion of the weakest possible food, it did perversely happen in 8.5 cases out of 10, either that it sickened from want and cold, or fell into the fire from neglect, or got half smothered by accident. In any one of which cases, the miserable little being was usually summoned into another world, and there gathered to the fathers it had never known in this. Occasionally, when there was some more than usually interesting inquest upon a parish child who had been overlooked in turning up a bedstead, or inadvertently scalded to death, when there happened to be a washing, though the latter accident was very scarce, anything approaching to a washing being of rare occurrence in the farm, the jury would take it into their heads to ask troublesome questions, or the parishioners would rebelliously affix their signatures to a remonstrance. But these impertinences were speedily checked by the evidence of the surgeon, and the testimony of the beadle, the former of whom had always opened the body, and found nothing inside, which was very probable indeed, and the latter of whom invariably swore whatever the parish wanted, which was very self-devotional. Besides, the board made periodical pilgrimages to the farm, and always sent the beadle the day before, to say they were going. The children were neat and clean to behold when they went, and what more would the people have? It cannot be expected that this system of farming would produce any very extraordinary or luxuriant crop. Oliver Twist's 9th birthday found him a pale, thin child, somewhat diminutive in stature, and decidedly small in circumference. But nature or inheritance had implanted a good sturdy spirit in Oliver's breast. It had had plenty of room to expand, thanks to the spare diet of the establishment. and perhaps to this circumstance may be attributed his having any ninth birthday at all. Be this as it may, however, it was his ninth birthday, and he was keeping it in the coal cellar with a select party of two other young gentlemen, who, after participating with him in a sound thrashing, had been locked up for atrociously presuming to be hungry, when Mrs. Mann, the good lady of the house, was unexpectedly startled by the apparition of Mr. Bumble, the beetle, striving to undo the wicket of the garden gate. "Goodness gracious! Is that you, Mr. Bumble, sir?" apostrophe said Mrs. Mann, thrusting her head out of the window in well-affected ecstasies of joy. Apostrophe Susan, take Oliver and them two brats upstairs, and wash them directly. My heart alive! Mr. Bumble, how glad I am to see you, sure lie! Apostrophe apostrophe. Now, Mr. Bumble was a fat man, and a choleric. So, instead of responding to this open-hearted salutation in a kindred spirit, he gave the little wicket a tremendous shake, and then bestowed upon it a kick which could have emanated from no leg but a beetle's. "Lor, only think," apostrophe said Mrs. Mann, running out, for the three boys had been removed by this time, "only think of that. That I should have forgotten that the gate was bolted on the inside, on account of them dear children. Walk in, sir, walk in, pray, Mr. Bumble, do, sir." Apostrophe, although this invitation was accompanied with a curtsy that might have softened the heart of a churchwarden, it by no means mollified the beadle. "Do you think this respectful or proper conduct, Mrs. Mann?" apostrophe inquired Mr. Bumble, grasping his cane, "to keep the parish officers a-waiting at your garden gate, when they come here upon parochial business with the parochial orphans. Are you aware, Mrs. Mann, that you are, as I may say, a parochial delegate, and a stipendiary?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "I'm sure, Mr. Bumble, that I was only a-telling one or two of the dear children as is so fond of you, that it was you a-coming," apostrophe replied Mrs. Mann with great humility. Mr. Bumble had a great idea of his oratorical powers and his importance. He had displayed the one, and vindicated the other. He relaxed. "Well, well, Mrs. Mann," apostrophe he replied in a calmer tone, "it may be as you say, it may be. Lead the way in, Mrs. Mann, for I come on business, and have something to say." Apostrophe, Mrs. Mann ushered the beadle into a small parlor with a brick floor, placed a seat for him, and officiously deposited his cocked hat and can on the table before him. Mr. Bumble wiped from his forehead the perspiration which his walk had engendered, glanced complacently at the cocked hat, and smiled. Yes, he smiled. Beetles are but men. And Mr. Bumble smiled. "Now don't you be offended at what I may going to say," apostrophe observed Mrs. Mann, with captivating sweetness. "You've had a long walk, you know, or I wouldn't mention it. Now, will you take a little drop of something, Mr. Bumble?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "Not a drop. Nor a drop," apostrophe said Mr. Bumble, waving his right hand in a dignified, but placid manner. "I think you will," apostrophe said Mrs. Mann, who had noticed the tone of the refusal, and the gesture that had accompanied it. "Just a little drop, with a little cold water, and a lump of sugar." Apostrophe, Mr. Bumble coughed. "Now, just a little drop," apostrophe said Mrs. Mann persuasively. "What is it?" apostrophe apostrophe inquired the beadle. "Why, it's what I'm obliged to keep a little of in the house, to put into the blessed infant staffy, when they ain't well, Mr. Bumble," apostrophe replied Mrs. Mann as she opened a corner cupboard, and took down a bottle and glass. "It's gin. I'll not deceive you, Mr. B, it's gin. Apostrophe, do you give the children daffy, Mrs. Mann?" Apostrophe apostrophe inquired Bumble, following with his eyes the interesting process of mixing. "Ah, bless 'em, that I do, dear as it is," apostrophe replied the nurse. "I couldn't see 'em suffer before my very eyes, you know, sir. Apostrophe, no, said Mr. Bumble approvingly. No, you could not. You are a humane woman, Mrs. Mann. Apostrophe, here she set down the glass. I shall take an early opportunity of mentioning it to the board, Mrs. Mann. Apostrophe, he drew it towards him. You feel as a mother, Mrs. Mann. Apostrophe, he stirred the gin and water. I drink your health with cheerfulness, Mrs. Mann, and he swallowed half of it. And now about business, apostrophe said the beadle, taking out a leathern pocketbook. The child that was half-baptized Oliver Twist is 9 years old today. Semicolon, bless him. Apostrophe apostrophe interposed Mrs. Mann, inflaming her left eye with the corner of her apron. And notwithstanding a offered reward of £10, which was afterwards increased to £20, notwithstanding the most superlative, and, I may say, supernatural exertions on the part of this parish, apostrophe said Bumble, we have never been able to discover who is his father, or what was his mother's settlement, name, or condition. Apostrophe, Mrs. Mann raised her hands in astonishment, but added, after a moment's reflection, how comes he to have any name at all, then? Apostrophe apostrophe, the beetle drew himself up with great pride, and said, I invented it. Apostrophe, you, Mr. Bumble. Apostrophe apostrophe, I, Mrs. Mann. We name our fondlings in alphabetical order. The last was a S, Swubble, I named him. This was a T, Twist, I named him. The next one comes will be Unwin, and the next Vilkins. I have got names ready made to the end of the alphabet, and all the way through it again, when we come to Z apostrophe, why, you're quite a literary character, sir. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mrs. Mann. Well, well, apostrophe said the beadle, evidently gratified with the compliment. Perhaps I may be, Mrs. Mann. Apostrophe he finished the gin and water, and added, Oliver being now too old to remain here, the board have determined to have him back into the house. I have come out myself to take him there. So let me see him at once. Apostrophe, I'll fetch him directly, apostrophe said Mrs. Mann, leaving the room for that purpose. Oliver, having had by this time as much of the outer coat of dirt which encrusted his face and hands, removed, as could be scrubbed off in one washing, was led into the room by his benevolent protectress. Make a bow to the gentleman, Oliver, apostrophe said Mrs. Mann. Oliver made a bow, which was divided between the beetle on the chair, and the cocked hat on the table. Will you go along with me, Oliver? Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Bumble, in a majestic voice. Oliver was about to say that he would go along with anybody with great readiness, when, glancing upward, he caught sight of Mrs. Mann, who had got behind the beetle's chair, and was shaking her fist at him with a furious countenance. He took the hint at once, for the fist had been too often impressed upon his body, not to be deeply impressed upon his recollection. Will she go with me? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired poor Oliver. No, she can't, apostrophe replied Mr. Bumble. But she'll come and see you sometimes. Apostrophe, this was no very great consolation to the child. Young as he was, however, he had sense enough to make a feint of feeling great regret at going away. It was no very difficult matter for the boy to call tears into his eyes. Hunger and recent ill usage are great assistants, if you want to cry, and Oliver cried very naturally indeed. Mrs. Mann gave him 1,000 embraces, and what Oliver wanted a great deal more, a piece of bread and butter, lest he should seem too hungry when he got to the workhouse. With the slice of bread in his hand, and the little brown cloth parish cap on his head, Oliver was then led away by Mr. Bumble from the wretched home, where one kind word or look had never lighted the gloom of his infant years. And yet he burst into an agony of childish grief, as the cottage gate closed after him. Wretched as were the little companions in misery he was leaving behind, they were the only friends he had ever known, and the sense of his loneliness in the great wide world sank into the child's heart for the first time. Mr. Bumble walked on with long strides. Little Oliver, firmly grasping his gold-laced cuff, trotted beside him, inquiring at the end of every quarter of a mile whether they were nearly there. Apostrophe to these interrogations, Mr. Bumble returned very brief and snappish replies, for the temporary blandness which gin and water awakens in some bosoms had by this time evaporated, and he was once again a beetle. Oliver had not been within the walls of the workhouse a quarter of an hour, and had scarcely completed the demolition of a second slice of bread, when Mr. Bumble, who had handed him over to the care of an old woman, returned, and, telling him it was a board night, informed him that the board had said he was to appear before it forthwith. Not having a very clearly defined notion of what a live board was, Oliver was rather astounded by this intelligence, and was not quite certain whether he ought to laugh or cry. He had no time to think about the matter, however, for Mr. Bumble gave him a tap on the head with his cane to wake him up, and another on the back to make him lively, and bidding him to follow, conducted him into a large whitewashed room, where 8 or 10 fat gentlemen were sitting round a table. At the top of the table, seated in an armchair rather higher than the rest, was a particularly fat gentleman with a very round red face. "Bow to the board, apostrophe," said Bumble. Oliver brushed away 2 or 3 tears that were lingering in his eyes, and seeing no board but the table, fortunately bowed to that. "What's your name, boy?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said the gentleman in the high chair. Oliver was frightened at the sight of so many gentlemen, which made him tremble, and the beetle gave him another tap behind, which made him cry. These two causes made him answer in a very low and hesitating voice, whereupon a gentleman in a white waistcoat said he was a fool, which was a capital way of raising his spirits, and putting him quite at his ease. "Boy, apostrophe," said the gentleman in the high chair, "listen to me. You know you're an orphan, I suppose?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, what's that, sir?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," inquired poor Oliver. "The boy is a fool, I thought he was," apostrophe, said the gentleman in the white waistcoat. "Hush! Apostrophe, apostrophe," said the gentleman who had spoken first. "You know you've got no father or mother, and that you were brought up by Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.